Well, you already know that China is undergoing enormous upheaval. We talked on this show about some of the ways earlier in the week that are not always in the headlines in the West. But while many of us think that upheaval in terms of the economy or democracy is the only thing to talk about, China's gastronomy is also in flux. And here now to talk about this is Fuchsia Dunlop. She is a Chinese-trained cook and food writer. You may remember we had her on the show last year for her book, Revolutionary Chinese Cookbook. Her latest book is Shark's Fin and Sichuan Pepper, a sweet, sour memoir of eating in China. Hi, Fuchsia. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hello.
So is China finding some gastronomical equilibrium? You write that in the last 50 years or so, China has gone from qibao, which translates to eating to fill your belly, to qihao, eating plenty of rich food, to qichao, eating skillfully. What does this progression tell us?
Well, this is how a lot of people describe it. It's from, you know, the terrible period of the famine and the Cultural Revolution when people didn't have enough to eat. And then sort of after the reforms began, sort of being glad to suddenly have meat on the table, be able to eat well, and a great resurgence in restaurant culture. So there's been a kind of boom in gastronomy and very greedy eating and lots of fish and meat and banqueting and so on. And qichao is used to refer to a sort of emerging concern with some people that maybe this is a bit excessive and that maybe you should think more environmentally in terms of what you eat. And then sort of a growing interest in wild foods and so-called lushe shipin, green foods, which are supposed to be free of pollution.
So people in China are talking about eating green, not just people here.
No, it's a very parallel thing, I think, that you get this kind of heavy industrialization and then great fears about pollution and what's happening to the food supply.
You know, the first comment on our webpage for this segment is from Pam in New Jersey, who asks, what is the Chinese government doing to stop illegal poaching of endangered species such as shark, turtles, tigers, bears, some list? Do you have an answer for her?
Well, I think, I mean, eating sort of rare delicacies is a very old part of Chinese culinary culture and Chinese culture in general. And, of course, in the past, eating rare delicacies wasn't such a terrible problem. But in recent years, that you've got, because of the economic boom, a lot of rich people who want to kind of emulate the grand ways of the old officials and so on, who want to eat these things like shark's fin and sea cucumbers. And the Chinese appetite for these delicacies is driving many of these things to extinction, not only in China, but also in other parts of the world. In fact, there's a kind of worldwide trade in such delicacies, many of them endangered for the Chinese market. So within China, you know, there are laws protecting certain endangered species, but they're not always heeded because there's this deeply entrenched idea that these things are the most delicious that you can eat. And so often you actually get officials who should be protecting species who are eating them themselves. So I think it's a bit of a battle. But the good thing is that I think that, you know, as people become more aware of their environmental problems, and it is a sort of growing concern in China, one hopes that, you know, that these laws will be enforced you know, more seriously, and that it will become less desirable to eat them. But I think we're only just seeing the beginning of this.
But I gather that when you lived in China, you made the decision to eat everything.
I did. Well, when I went to China, I didn't want to be a distant expatriate. And of course, Chinese people are fantastically hospitable and often show their hospitality through food. And so I was faced almost every day with extraordinary things that I'd never come into contact with before. And so wanting to be polite and wanting to get involved in China and to get to understand it, I did eat absolutely everything that I was offered.
Like what at the more exotic end?
Well, deep-fried scorpions, goose intestines, snake soup, all kinds of things. I'm not really very shockable anymore.
You know, a lot of endangered animals are eaten by the Chinese for medicinal purposes, or at least what they think are medicinal purposes, right?
Yeah, this is one problem, that some things are supposed to be great tonic medicines, and often you find that the expensive delicacies have their medicinal value. And you know, it's not for some, there are substitutes of other, you know, kind of plants and so on that are not endangered. But this is not always the case. And again, it's very difficult to change an ancient food culture.
And as the book ends, you rationalize eating a caterpillar at your parents' home back in Oxford. So for you, the dilemma was in eating an endangered species, not in terms of eating something that was once, or in this case of the caterpillar, still alive.
Well, no, the caterpillar was not alive when I ate it. But no, I mean, the irony is that having deliberately eaten everything and eaten everything with great gusto, that I kind of demolished all my cultural barriers, and now I don't really eat like a normal English person. I mean, I eat just as my Chinese friends do. But now my omnivorousness is sort of curtailed by the decision that, for example, I don't want to eat shark's fin anymore. I don't think one should. And I think that, you know, you have to start taking a stand on these things.
It's too bad we can't eat, like, cockroaches and pigeons and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
I've eaten a few insects in my time in China.
People
not
do.
Cockroaches, but, you know, other creepy crawlies.
And I know people eat squab. But you also write that factories use ammonia and lead oxide to preserve duck eggs, and that anabolic steroids are pumped into Chinese meat. In fact, there was a New York Times article earlier this year that talked about how a caterer working for the U.S. Olympic Committee bought some chicken in a Chinese supermarket, had it tested, and discovered that it was so full of steroids that he feared any athlete that ate it would have tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. Did you know about that?
Yeah, well, like, in fact, one Chinese official who used to be in charge of anti-doping in Chinese sports actually said that he was worried that athletes eating Chinese meat might test over the limit because of the steroids pumped into the meat. Yes, I mean, the Chinese authorities have gone to great lengths to reassure athletes and visitors to the Olympic Games that they will have good supplies of food and that they will make sure that they're not feeding people foods that are polluted.
What's the role of steroids in agriculture?
I think just to boost the animals.
Hmm. And according to the World Bank, 16 of the 20 most polluted cities in the world are in China. Are you seeing repercussions in people's health as a result of this? Does it affect the food chain?
I think it does, and it's something that you know, I've personally become more worried about. And I think there are more and more food scares in the Chinese press itself. So, yes, it is becoming a problem and a more serious problem.
You also write that you were in China in 2003 during the outbreak of their SARS epidemic. What did you see?
Well, it was an extraordinary time, really, because it seemed very frightening that, you know, there was this epidemic that looked as though it was going to get out of control. And so there were all kinds of restrictions on traveling around the country. You know, every time you got a bus, your seat number and the bus number and everything was written down with your telephone number so that if somebody got sick, you could be quarantined. Restaurants closed down. And then, of course, Chinese people, because in China food is medicine, that, you know, people started changing their diets and drinking herbal tonics that were supposed to protect against SARS and so on. So it was a very difficult time to be in China.
Fuchsia Dunlop, my guest on WNYC. Her new book is Shark's Fin and Sichuan Pepper, a sweet-sour memoir of eating in China. And by the way, someone reacting to your idea of eating skillfully posted on our comments page, perhaps the real question is whether Shanghai will be getting a Whole Foods anytime soon. Is there a Chinese equivalent?
Well, in Chinese supermarkets these days, you can find some organic products. And, you know, there's one restaurant that opened recently that serves any organic seasonal produce. But I think it's just that the Chinese are just beginning to have these kind of concerns. And I think it's also important to remember that, you know, in Western countries as well, that we have lots of problems with pollutants in the food chain. So it's not just China. But, yeah, I think, you know, there will be more of this coming in the coming years.
Let me ask you a palate question. You write that texture is the last frontier for Westerners learning to appreciate Chinese food. And you write about what you call the rubber factor. Did you cross the texture frontier?
I did. Well, I think it took me several years because I think, you know, I went to China vowing to eat everything, and I was faced with a lot of Chinese foods that are prized really for their texture alone. So things like tendons from the throat of oxes, goose intestines, and sea cucumbers, shark's fin, these delicacies too, which don't actually have any flavor themselves. And I think that, you know, in the beginning I ate them just to be polite, but they didn't really give me any pleasure, and I couldn't mm-hmm. think why people would want to eat rubber bands like this. But over the years, I have come to appreciate that the colgan, the mouthfeel of a food, is something equally important, and that actually, you know, developing an awareness of what's going on in your mouth, you can grow to enjoy the kind of slithery, rubbery, and crunchy textures that are sort of found rather unappealing in Western gastronomy.
So without having to imagine the feel of goose intestines too meticulously, would squid be a similar experience?
Well, it's interesting. interesting that you bring that up, because squid is one of the few things in sort of Western cooking which sometimes gives you a bit of that rubberiness and which is still prized. I know if it's too rubbery, people don't like it.
Yeah.
But that kind of goes towards the rubber factor.
If it's too rubbery, you can't chew it up. But the chapter in your book called Only Barbarians Eat Salad, that's going to be a new idea to a lot of Westerners. And I guess it neatly encapsulates what the Chinese think of people who eat any kind of uncooked food.
Yeah. Well, in the distant past, you know, the Chinese did, you know, barbarians, there were the raw barbarians and the cooked barbarians, the raw ones who ate most raw food, and they were the ones that you really couldn't deal with. They were beyond the pale. And cooked barbarians living at the fringes of the Chinese Empire were people that you could sort of at a pinch do business with. And this is all a very long time ago, but even now, you know, many in Chinese cuisine, you don't find many raw vegetables or raw foods in general. And that's one of the things that my Chinese friends find most difficult about Western food. You know, I took some chefs actually to the Culinary Institute of America a few years ago from Sichuan. They'd never been to the West before.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them said after a few days of salad lunches that if he ate any more raw food, he would turn into a savage. They were absolutely horrified by rare meat. You know, they saw a bit of blood and they thought this was incredibly unhygienic and dangerous.
And by cheese.
Oh, cheese, yeah. Well, there's one rather memorable description of by a Chinese person of cheese as the putrefied discharge of a cow's udder. I think it's just a reminder that people often think that, you know, Westerners often think that Chinese food is weird and outlandish with all these strange delicacies. But for Chinese people coming to the West for the first time, there are similar shocks.
Is that also a texture thing?
Sorry?
Is it also a texture thing?
With the cheese?
Yeah.
No, because in fact, the Chinese fermented bean curd, doufu ru, is very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
It has the same high fermented taste and the same cheesy texture. So I think it's more about the idea of dairy products as being a little bit risque anyway. And then one, you know, for example, a blue cheese that's gone moldy. Horrifying. It's just like Westerners confronted with a preserved duck egg, which is sort of black and gray and looks monstrous if you're not used to it.
All right, we've got a minute left. And you may know that you were Cookbook of the Month for the month of March on chowhound.com. And there was an explosion of posts talking about modifying the recipes based on the availability of ingredients. And someone posted, perhaps someone might explain what's with the rampant substitute of ingredients going on during Dunlop month. How can one possibly understand the nature of a recipes if they start by swapping out components? You want to weigh in?
Well, I think that actually most of the ingredients you can find in good Chinese supermarkets. So, yes, I think most of them you can. Even Sichuan pepper, which for a long time was banned from import to the United States, but is now available in Chinatowns in the United States.
So what do you substitute for that?
Oh, there is no substitute, but you can find it if you look.
Were you aware of that going on Chowhound?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was very delighted that everyone was cooking my recipes and commenting. And if I ever do another edition of either book, I'll take their comments into consideration.
All right. Fuchsia Dunlop, the two books, the new one, Shark's Fin and Sichuan Pepper, a sweet sour memoir of eating in China. The previous one, which we also had her on for last year, Revolutionary Chinese Cookbook. Thanks. It's been a great conversation. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.